Christmas time to come in, Christmas time to come in, and I know I'm going home. Snowflakes are falling, my old home's calling, tall pines are humming when Christmas time's coming. Can't you hear them bells ringing, ringing, joy to all?
Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It's Wednesday, December 5th, 2018, and I think I might title today's program Perspective. You've helped me regain it, Jason. You know, we're into Advent. Jason preached a good message this Sunday, and it was just the reminder we're launching into this time to be especially mindful of the Lord and of God and this unique time of year. And before Jason got here, I was troubled by just some of the things that are going on in the world. And as Jason and I talk always before our program, what was that? Oh, God. Anyway, oh, Jason pulled out his sword, the Bible. He opened up the Bible. And he said, yeah, I pulled it out of the sheath.
Sheath.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I found this.
It's sharpening the sword. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Maybe you could add that. Every time we open the Bible, you could have the sword
sound effect. Yeah. Well, the perspective that you reignited in me was the fact that, yeah, we are in troubled times. Yeah, there's things happening. We're talking about the treatment of slaves and things that have happened in Africa and America. And I don't know. I think I was just purging some of the heaviness of all the sin and corruption and problems in the world. And you gave me that perspective again. Yeah, these things do happen, but they point us towards this loving God, this time of year that God came to redeem mankind, that sin does have consequences and effects. And yeah, it weighs heavy on all of us because we are compassionate and concerned and want to be merciful. And yet there is a Redeemer that has paved a way, and we're in that time of year to be mindful of so that we can kind of cope, because there is that good news message and we do have hope, and God will resolve it all, and there is an end game. There is an answer to all this suffering and pain. And I guess I just forgot that I was in the midst of Advent and got caught up with the sinful nature of man, including myself. And it was just a reminder that you said, you know, this is a thing that God came for and why he came, because there is sin in the world, and not to get so distraught or caught up in that. And I don't know if you're like me. You can have that tendency. You leave church and have that wonderful worshipful experience and then just get caught up in the everyday affairs, the pressures of life, and forget all about it. And so thank you for giving me that perspective again, that we as Christians carry that good news message. Yeah, we can be troubled over things, but there still should be that element of joyfulness or that peace that surpasses all understanding, because we are on the winning team. God has dealt with things, and there's an eternity to look beyond maybe the earthly troubles.
Well, I think that's a difficulty, right? You say it, but it's you know, it's kind of like we're on the winning team, but I'm human, and I feel all these things, and I experience all these things, and yes, I know. I mean, I heard somebody use this phrase recently, and I like it a lot. He says, two things can be true at once. And I think in this case, that's entirely true. Two things can be true at once. We are on the winning team, and this is really hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to watch what's happening in the world. It's hard to watch the way people treat one another and the things that are going on. It's hard to look at the brokenness. We know that ultimately how it works out, but it's true that it's not easy. It's difficult. And I think that we need to maybe adopt this idea of these two things being true at one time, because we're so used to living in maybe a world where only one thing gets to be true, and that's it. And so we just go, well, we're on the winning team. And so everybody goes, yeah, I know, but that doesn't do anything for what I'm struggling with right now. That doesn't do anything. Yeah, I'm on the winning team, but what do I do with my feelings? What do I do with my frustrations? What do I do with all that I'm experiencing in my heart in the middle of all that is going on around me? And it's no shock to me that, you know, God says in the Old Testament that he gives them the feasts and the festivals to mark out times of remembrance. Mm-hmm. And those times are to kind of bring people back to center, you know, because always throughout the course of a year or any given amount of time, we begin to wander left or we begin to wander right. And we need something. a true kind of North moment to bring us back to center. You know, and that's what, for so long, I mean, that's what the patriotic holidays would do. I don't know if they're as effective anymore as they once were, and I think it's because the generation that really made those so powerful for us has begun to die away. But, I mean, you know, there was a time when Veterans Day or Memorial Day, it would bring us back to this kind of true north of what was sacrificed for the sake of our nation and what it means to be this nation, this melting pot of people who fought for one another, for the values and the rights, freedom, the right, free speech, and all of those things. And so I think that you need these kind of true north moments to bring us back to center. And that's one of the things that Advent and Christmas do for us. They bring us back to that true center. We're supposed to be coming back to, okay, God came into the world. And if God came into the world, a crazy out of the... I mean, nobody expected it because they didn't expect God was going to come in flesh in Nazareth, a place where nothing good comes from. And be born into poverty to a woman and a man. I mean, they had no conception for how this was going to go. And yet, that's the way it happened. Mm-hmm. And so I think as God comes into that situation, God can come into any situation. Right. And even the most crazy situations, the situations we think like, is there any way God could come into this? Is there any way that God could be a part of this? And he's going to do it in a spectacular way, but also a way that kind of confounds us. I mean, Paul writes later and says, you know, the gospel. And the gospel is the good news of God. It's not simply the proclamation of the good news of God. It is the good news of God. The gospel, he says, is foolishness. It looks like foolishness to those who are perishing. And so it makes me think of Tiananmen Square, that long line of tanks, communist country and this communist regime pressing the people, and this long line of green tanks showing the might of the government, and this one man standing in front of it holding a couple of grocery bags. He was the good news in that moment. And in the face of that opposition, you look at that picture and you seem like, wow, it's so powerful. And one of the things that I think makes it so powerful is that it's so foolish. It's not the way that we would do it. Right. You know, how do you stand up to an oppressive government in a line of tanks? You just stand in front of it. I mean, that's not on your list of things to do. You'd go, well, I have to get a tank. I have to create my own oppressive government. I have to create my own might, you know, or maybe subversively I have to guerrilla warfare. I don't know. But that's not the way you would think to do it. And yet that's essentially, pictures like that are essentially the way that God has consistently come into history and worked.
Yeah.
And through people who you didn't expect, people who you didn't understand, people you just kind of scratched your head. That's the story of Saul and David. Even before the program started, we were talking, you were sharing about David and some of the things in your reading. But isn't that the story of that? I mean, Saul is the guy who everybody thinks should be king. He's a head taller than everybody else. He's built. He's brash. You know, he's very forward. He's all these things. And so everybody's like, hey, he's the guy, man. That's our guy. You know, and he turns out to be a nut. I mean, I was reading, it's funny because reading that for BSF, and I just had to kind of chuckle because Saul's way of dealing with everything is to throw a spear at it. I mean, he throws a spear at David three times. He throws a spear at Jonathan. I mean, every time he gets frustrated, he picks up a spear and throws a spear. I thought, somebody needs to take the spear away from him. I wonder if there's anybody who's like, you know, maybe we should hide the spear in case he, you know, loses his mind or gets angry. But he wasn't the guy that they thought should be the guy. And so all of a sudden, enter onto the scene David, who nobody thought, and we've joked so many times, plays the harp, writes songs, kind of a man of the earth, he's a shepherd boy, and now he becomes this great military commander, he becomes all of these things, and I think that's not the one we would have picked.
Yeah, even his own family and his father didn't even call him in when Samuel was picking him out, mm-hmm. left him out in the field.
In fact, his one brother steps forward, and Samuel, the Bible even says, Samuel says, this must be the Lord's appointed person. And then it's like, nope, that's not it. Yeah. Don't you have another son? Yeah, I have one that's like not really good for much. He's out back. You want me to get him? You know, because we don't put anything we really care about out back. And so he goes and gets him, and he brings him in, and David's the guy. But you know what's interesting is we were having a conversation at our BSF men's group about this. And one of the guys said, you know, well, but David, and he didn't even say it. I made the connection, and I was like, wow, this is profound. He goes, well, you know, David, he was out shepherding with all these wild animals, you know, killing bears and killing lions. But he was out there with all these wild animals, and it prepared him for the later in life. And I said, yeah. Because wasn't Saul a wild animal? I mean, he really was. And David was well accustomed to being around that, to being attentive. I wonder how David always dodged the spear was because David was attentive to his surroundings as a shepherd. And so the Lord looks at the heart, not at the outside. We look at the outside, not at the heart. We rarely address the heart. Instead, we always look at the external. And so, you know, I think that when I prayed for us, regarding, you know, some of the things that you're saying, my words were profound for you. Said no one ever. But I think really the thing is that when we look out and we say all that is broken in the world and we say all that is not right with the world, would we be bold enough to first start with ourselves and say what's mm-hmm. broken in me? What's not right with me? Because, listen, the world, it's easy to go, the world's messed up. It's easy to go, Africa's messed up.
Yeah, point the finger.
Yeah. It's easy to say, I'll never go to that store again. But the thing is that it has nothing to do with that store. Because that's too easy. You know, especially maybe there's somebody out there listening to this right now that says, I'll never go back to that church. How could a building wrong you? How could a building have wronged you? It didn't. It was people. Broken people just like you who maybe didn't handle themselves the way they should have, or maybe made a mistake, or maybe didn't articulate themselves the way that they could have or should have articulated themselves, maybe operating in the flesh instead of the spirit like all of us tend to do all the time. But I think we need to be smarter than that. It's too easy. I think honestly that's our flesh operating in the flesh even more when we go, well, that thing, I hate that store, I hate that church, I hate that business, I hate that, all that. You don't. What happened is you had a misdealing with a broken person in the midst of that, and now it's easy to kind of blanket that it's that thing, because if you talk about the broken person, you may actually have to address some of the things that are broken about you. Because I know that whenever I start to list things about people, you know, I start to say, oh, my person's selfish. That person is arrogant. That person is prideful. Then I got to stop and go, sometimes I'm selfish. Sometimes I'm a little arrogant. Sometimes I can be prideful.
Well, we talked about that, too, with our children. You know, we have to tolerate this, and they keep doing that. How many times have I told you that? And then we realize, how many times has God told us, Mark, again? You know, and so sometimes I think God puts children in our lives so we can see how we're the same way with our relationship with God. We take them for granted. We're self-centered. We repeat same things.
Sure.
He's told us things over and over again. And
yeah, and so I think that we need to start with us. I think that, you know, one of the things that we have to do is to begin to look inside of ourselves. It was really interesting. We had this conversation with a group that I was with the other day.
Our Israel reunion night?
No.
We had a lot of great conversations.
We had a lot of great conversations that night. No, it wasn't that, but it was a really interesting conversation. Somebody had brought up that David, it seems as though when you read the Psalms and you read Samuel and you read all of the stuff regarding David's life, David is very self-aware. Like, David is very aware of his feelings. I mean, the Psalms are almost to a point where you're like, gosh, David, get it together. You know, because David's like, oh, how long will I grieve to you? How long will I cry out? My eyes are tired from tears. You know, it's like David is, I'm fearful to the point of death. He just lays it all out there. But David is very aware of how he feels. He's very self-aware. And when somebody said that, I kind of dinged in my mind, because over the last couple weeks, I've seen a number of articles that have come out that have said that due to technology and kind of the way that we live today, we are less self-aware. Hmm. Because we are so dependent upon things telling us how we should feel, how things should be. In the morning, I get this goofy text message that says, it's going to be cold, don't forget to dress warm. I don't have to be aware of my surroundings. I've got something to tell me what I need to do. We offload so much of what we should be looking inside and asking about. Hmm. I think, therefore, we're less self-aware. And I think that plays itself out in how we deal with other people, because we're not aware of our own weaknesses. We're not aware of our own pitfalls and our own traps. I know that there's certain things about me that I need to be careful. I don't put myself in certain situations because I know how I react to those situations. I know that that's a weakness for me. And so I need to try and navigate those the best I can to avoid them because, you know, honestly, they never goes well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I know there's things that frustrate me, and so I need to be careful how I engage those things. I have to be self-aware about those things, or if not, every time you step in the bear trap. And so I think that we have to be willing, or we have to be aware, to look inside of our own selves and say, okay, what about me? In some ways, in shape, maybe that'll help you build some bridges of empathy towards other people who really frustrate you, or build some bridges of empathy to the brokenness in the world, because you're going, I can see how that can happen, because that could happen given enough rope in my own life.
Right.
You know, don't ever think that. It's so easy. And Jesus points this out so many times, doesn't he? And I'm really paraphrasing right now, but I think that in a lot of the different teachings, Jesus would say, it's so easy for you to point the finger instead of looking inside. And I think that's why he makes such a big deal about the Pharisee and the tax collector praying, when he says, you know, the Pharisee stands up and he says, you know, oh, I tithe my mint and my dill, and I do that. Thank God I'm not like that tax collector. Because it's so easy to point that. And I think Jesus would say, no, you're actually worse than that tax collector.
Yeah.
And that's what Jesus points out in the parable. He says, well, the tax collector just beat his breast and said, I'm a sinner. At least the tax collector was honest enough to admit his condition. The Pharisee wouldn't have any of that. Instead, he had to point to the condition of somebody else. And it's so easy for us to say, that thing over there is broken, instead of taking a moment and saying, I'm broken too.
The illustration of, before you talk about the speck, you know, that little sin or whatever in that person, the big plank, like a little sliver to a plank in your own eye.
Right, yeah. Well, and so I think Jesus is always saying, I want you to become more self-aware. I want you to look more inside of your own heart. And the reason I think he wants to do that is because Jesus came for our hearts. He wants our hearts. You know, he came to save us. And the things that build up between us and God are the things that we build up in our hearts. The walls and those kinds of things that keep us from God. You know, the secret places in our hearts where we try and hide things away from God instead of being entirely open with God. Mm-hmm. And even in your brokenness, saying to the Lord, you know what, Lord, in this place I suffer from pride. Will you help me with that pride? Instead of trying to hide it away from him as though he doesn't know it exists. Right. Like, you know, I'm not prideful. And the Lord's going, well, there's that one area. Don't look at that. You don't see that. Nothing, you know, nothing to see here. Move on.
Yeah.
And so I just think we need to look more inside of ourselves. We need to be more self-aware. We need to give those things over to God. And at the same time, we need to ask the Lord to make us cautious and mindful of those things, because we know those are pitfalls, those are traps. And then I think also our prayer should be, you know, how, Lord, can you use me to affect change in those things in the world? And a lot of you would say, well, you know what, I can't affect change in Africa. I mean, what do you, I'm a single parent and I'm on a fixed income. And I mean, I don't have money to give to that. I can't go on a mission trip. I don't understand what you mean. You can pray. You can pray. Some of the greatest movements in history have started because people have began to pray into areas of brokenness for wholeness and shalom and peace to come inside those places. And miraculously, they have come.
Or it could be just extending love to that neighbor who knows somebody from Africa. I mean, you know,
right.
The other day here, I had a whole program yesterday talking about ping pong, and I said I wouldn't even go there, and then Marianne, I got all wound up, and I was telling these stories.
So it's a program about idolatry?
But this guy from...
You're going to start
Togo.
Again, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I'm just going to share. So after the program later on, this what I think is the best ping pong player I've ever seen or met. He came into the studio. I had texted him. Well, Bob Freeman, the pastor of the United Methodist Church of Urbana, the one next door, he happens to come in too. And we carry on about a 15-minute conversation with God sightings and sharing. And Bob's like, I know a physician locally here that goes to Togo all the time. And that's where this guy's from. And they were making connections. Mm-hmm. And he's hoping to take his prelims or whatever, and then his residency and such, and then serve maybe as a missionary doctor or serve back in his country. And Bob was making these connections. I know this other doctor here, and you need to meet this. And after this gentleman left, his name's Masan. After Masan left, Bob and I were just kind of reveling. He goes, you know, I was running an errand for my secretary, and I saw you in here, and I stopped by. And so we just talked and said, isn't it like God to fashion that divine appointment so that those two got to meet. Mm-hmm. And I was challenging this new friend, you know, he needs to be in church, and, you know, maybe this Sunday he can go to an area church. And I said, hey, Bob's next door, Pastor Freeman's next door, so we already met him. And anyways, he said, yeah, I think I will this Sunday. Mm, he said, text me. And so it doesn't have to necessarily be, you know, supporting the missionary or right. going on the mission trip. It could be an act of kindness, inviting somebody over for a meal, stopping and pausing and holding a door and extending courtesy. Sure. And through that, a conversation begins and God works.
Yeah, instead of pushing things apart, why don't you be the catalyst for pulling them back together? And some of that is pulling people to your dinner table, pulling people into relationship, a cup of coffee, pulling people in to pray. Instead of pushing people away, pulling them in, because, you know, not being self-aware is pushing people away and pointing things out instead of pulling people together. And I think that's more like what Jesus came to do. He came to bring the world back together, or at least to begin to do that in his coming at Christmas. And ultimately, he will come back together and bring all the world back together. Heavens and earth will come back together. There will be no sun, moon, or stars, and all the things shall be as they should.
Amen. Well, I think pausing and having that perspective. Sunday, it was great. We're launching into Advent, and yet, you know, a few days removed, I got corrupted by the world or influenced, and, you know, it's pausing again, maybe getting with another believer and just recalibrating your mindset. God is in control. God is in charge. This is the good news message. This is the time of year we can celebrate Christ and reorganizing or reordering our priorities and remembering God's in control. Mm. He's a good God. All right. Well, may that transmit to you. Maybe you started your day like me, a little overwhelmed with things in the world.
If you watched the news, you certainly did.
Yeah. So hopefully our God-honoring Christmas music and the ministry of the various hosts and programmers and pastors will encourage you with the message. Mm-hmm. And pause today and thank God for the various things that he's spoiling us with. All the abilities and gifts and things that we get to enjoy. We really have a great God, and he deserves our praise. So, hey, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for making one of our four frequencies your home on the dial, and keep listening for great Christmas music and special programming in the days ahead. And we just pray that the ministry of Great News Radio will really help you be attentive and aware, self-aware of the God that we worship and celebrate during this time. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Pastor Jason Schiffo with the ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you. Have a great day and night.